And now help me welcome from Vacaville, Carol D.
Deep breath. My name is Carol and I am an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank Kristen for inviting me and all our conversations. I could hardly wait to meet her, and she is exactly like she was on a phone, a really wonderful, warm and welcoming personality. Then we got to our dinner, and it was, of course, we went to the wrong restaurant, and my husband is in a wheelchair, and we have an oxygen tank with us, so we're sitting there, and my granddaughter's got to push us over there, and I was like this. And one of the other ladies we had dinner with said, yeah, you know, it's crazy, and you come in and see us crazy. And I go, no, I walk in here, and you're my people. I'm okay, because I can take a breath and be okay no matter who I am, where I am. So thank you for the invitation to be here. And thank you, too, to the newcomers for announcing yourself. If anybody else is in here, don't worry. It gets better. And if you hate where you are and you don't think that anything can happen, yeah, I agree with you. That's what I did the first meeting I went to. But I stuck it out anyway, and I urge you to do that as much as you can. If your life is destroyed and devastated by alcohol, like mine was. And happy birthday to everybody. I haven't had a drink for 11,840 days, which is a little over 32 years. And my husband and I both track our days, because one of my sponsees who moved from Tucson, Arizona, came to town about 17 years now. We can't believe that. And she was told from the first day, you know, we do this program one day at a time. And some days are harder than others, but if we keep it to that, we don't have to drink or go crazy anymore. Too crazy. I still go crazy. I have to admit that. I knew I was different when I was in kindergarten. I was teasing this guy named Keith. I just saw his sister at a funeral recently. And the teacher said, Mrs. Johnson said, Carol, why are you doing that? Why are you acting like that? And it was like something, I remember it clearly, snapped in my head. Wait a minute, I got to be what she thinks I'm supposed to be. So that started the pattern of always checking out the room, seeing who got the best attention and trying to become that person, whether it's to be smart or to take over, do things. I was never silly. I could never do that. I could never let go enough because I had parents who didn't know how to be silly and let go enough. My mother was an alcoholic. It's not why I'm an alcoholic, even though there's a lot of alcoholics in my family. She never learned the tools to be okay with who she was, where she was. And I proceeded to live my life like that. I also was drugged to bars when I was 5, 6, and 7, and it was the happiest place on earth. It was my Disneyland. I loved it. My parents weren't arguing. The music was on the jukebox. And Pete and Ida's bar in Fireball, California. Willie Mays and Willie McCovey were up there. I'm a Giants fan. Go Giants. But anyway. And the music, Frank Sinatra was there, and I danced on the guy's toes, and my parents were happy, and I thought, that's where life happens. And I couldn't wait to start drinking. And the first bottle I shared with two friends, when we finished it, I ran home and got another bottle. And I was 14 years old. And my mother caught me and said, don't steal our booze and cigarettes, and don't ever do it behind our back. And I never smoked again. And they never knew how much. Not in my whole life. I know how to focus my energy. And I looked older, I acted older, I was able to con people, I was the one that could get the booze, and I never got caught because I was in charge of my world, because my mother was a raging alcoholic by this time. And I always wanted to be somewhere else. It wasn't okay in Fireball. Probably still isn't, but you know, my brother still lives there. It wasn't okay at Dos Palos High School. I had to be, there was something missing in me. And I always wanted to be over there. It was always going to be better over there. Did you ever think like that? You know, if I was only over there, if I only had him, if she only liked me, if I only had that job, if only. And that's how I live my life. And that took me to a marriage. This was an act of love to come up here because my husband is ill. And it's very hard for us to travel, but I was so taken by both Richard G., who I know very well from Vacaville, And Kristen and I said yes, and Tim and I worked it out, and my daughter and her daughter, who are living with us and helping us this time, she's 25, drove us up here, and we met my grandson who's going to Cal Poly, and that daughter of mine was the bane of my existence and the reason I drank for so much, and yet here she's driving me with her kids, all three of whom are in college, because I got out of her way and quit being the problem in her life. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, we put lives back, we get to, Alcoholics Anonymous does not put our lives back together. We get the tools to do it ourselves because this is a program of action. And I never believed that. So I did go through a marriage and ended up getting a paid for geographic from Las Banas, California to Vacaville with the job of a lifetime. And they moved me, they paid for it. It was more money I'd ever made in my life. Alcoholic's dream, everything's going to be different here. And, you know, I worked in Benicia, lived in Vacaville, got a home bar right away, and I was executive assistant in Benicia, and I was the bar fly at night. And Vacaville bars were quite boring, but I really tried. And one of them that opened up when I was in my heyday is right next door to the Alano Club in Vacaville. And I think, oh my God, the time, the stories that come out of that place. And I don't have to live like that today, but it was pretty, pretty awful. I thought I was a good mother. These kids were like 10 and 11. I would never knew when I was going to stay at the bar past 8 o'clock, and I always hid $20 bills in my jackets. So I call them, and I said, there's a $20 bill in the red jacket. Go up the hill to McDonald's and get your dinner. And I thought that made me a good mother. I also ran the Bobby Sox League. I also was on boards and everything because you got to go make those connections in bars. So I was being that good mother by doing that. And my kids were all by themselves most of the time. I crashed and burned. I planned the company's Christmas party at the Silverado Country Club in Napa, California, which is a very fancy place. It was like a multi-course dinner with different wines with each course, and I was in charge of everything, but I couldn't scare up a date because I do those things. At one time, I was the belle of the bar, and I got dates of men, mostly married men, interested in me, but alcoholism takes a toll on, it took a toll on me, and there wasn't people that were really interested in being around me unless there was something that's very dark happening. So my life was dark, and the darkness only lifted when I took another drink. But I couldn't acknowledge that, because at that point, I couldn't imagine my life with or without alcohol. I couldn't imagine it any different. If I only got him, if I only got this money, if only again. So anyway, I went to the Silverado Country Club. My boss gave me a whole suite there for a bonus, Christmas bonus. I couldn't get a date. And about midnight, his wife said, you know, the really good-looking men are over at the Holiday Inn, and unmarried men. And I said, okay, I'll go. So I drove my drunk car. Now, I'm dressed very fancy, but I had a drunk car. And a drunk car, it was a Pontiac Tempest, like a 65, and it was dented. You know our drunk cars, they have the wheels are scarred up. There may be like a crack light or something. Something's loose on it. And I took my drunk car and my finery, and a highway patrol stopped me. And I said, I was trying to dance and laugh and say, oh, I'm fine, just going over, I'm fine. And he said, say the ABCs. And I heard on the radio about, you know, learn your ABCs backwards, because that's what they ask you if they do a sobriety test. So I said, I can't do the ABCs backwards. And he said, I didn't ask you to do them backwards, just say the ABCs. And I went, A, B, C, D, E, and I couldn't remember F. So on go the cuffs, and there I go to jail. I accused them of being prejudiced because my car looked like a car of a Hispanic person. My friend Alice is here from Vacaville, one of my longtime sponsees. Her daughter lives in Paso Robles, and she's back there sitting next to my husband. And she understands that in Napa, you know, the grape workers and everything, and that's what my car looked like, and I am Hispanic, and so I was going to sue them, and blah, blah, blah. And they dumped me at the jail. It was the old Napa County jail. The drunk tank was full, thank God, because this was December. And I'm sitting there, they put me in this library. They threw a bundle of blankets, threw it on the floor, said, if you want to sleep, lie down on the floor. Immediately, keen alcoholic mind. First of all, before that happened, I was hysterical. I was saying, you're nothing but a drunk. You're just like your mother, Carol. You're going to do something, even if it's that AA. And I have no idea where AA came from. And the only thing I can think of after seeing The Days of Wine and Roses many years later, AA was in that. And I remember being in a theater kind of coming out of a brownout, watching that movie. And that had to be where AA was planted in my head. Because believe me, in Las Banas, it was not something anybody knew about. And I meant it. I meant it. I was hysterical. You know, hair is there. All of a sudden, I'm in my finery. I'm going to lose my job. Everything was over. I was done. And they threw that bundle in there and said, if you want to sleep, lay down on the floor. And it was like my mind went, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. And then this lady, who was an old lady, probably my age right now, she came in. They threw the bundle. She rolled it out. She laid down and she started snoring. And my mind snapped. You know what? I'm not that bad yet. You know what? It's 11 o'clock. We got to meet for the champagne brunch at the country club. I think I could get out of there because I talked the highway patrolman and not towing my car. He was going to park it. I can pay a cab driver to find it. The book talks about we cannot bring up with sufficient force the devastation of a week or two ago. I couldn't bring up minutes ago. It just snapped. Again, I compare my insides to your outsides. And I that's what I did. And I was at the brunch, and I was driving home drunk out of my mind that afternoon. I went to jail. I was surprised, shocked, really, really shocked. I had two DUIs. I'd forgotten about the first one because I thought I got away with it. And so I was with this group of second offenders, and I said, you've got this wrong. Well, isn't your name Carol Louise Vincent? Well, yeah, weren't you in Las Banas? Oh, yeah, I was. Okay, I was just driving past my married boyfriend's house, happy he was home with his wife and not out with his new girlfriend, you know. And the sheriff was not sympathetic, and not when I called him a frustrated highway patrolman either. That didn't help. But so there I am, dream job, going to lose it, I'm sure. Life is up, and how do I hide it? And the job knew. And they were sending hints to me about, I was executive assistant of a big construction firm. The hints of movies coming up about people that have a problem with drugs and alcohol and treatment. And I was not going to admit that. So what I do, what any good, smart alcoholic does, I quit the dream job. Saying, it's going to take three people to replace me. And it did. But they all had jobs. And I went to work for a construction company that was on the plan where builders go out and build big developments, beat down the subcontractors and don't pay them, bankrupt the subcontractors and bankrupt that job. And that's who I was working for, and I was part and parcel of that. I would tear out after the bank came around and did the draws of money and everything. It was my job to tear out the signatures for all the subcontractors' checks. And that's where I ended up. And along about November of that year, I had to start DUI school for part of my sentence. I was going to go to jail for 10 days. I was going to be on probation for 3 years. I had to pay a big fine. And I couldn't do anything but drive to meetings and to work and back. And that was in September, August, that was laid on me. And I had to enter a DUI school. And they had me on I arranged my life because I'm so important. And to meet this Wednesday night, and then there was a bunch of people, and these women were crying. And they said, well, we're going to break this up and have a men's group and a women's group. And I said, I will sue you. I am not going to be, Wednesday is my night, and I am not going to sit in a room with a bunch of women that are crying for a year. So you can't go in, it's an all-men's group. Fine. But I'm not going with women. And so they did. And the joke on me was three guys were happy and sober and Alcoholics Anonymous in that meeting. And all those guys did was laugh at me. Because every time I spout my stuff about this and I know this, and the three guys would go out afterwards and have a few, and they would just laugh, Carol, you got to go to meetings. You're going to have to go to meetings. Why don't you go to this meeting? So I had a particularly horrible drunk. And another thing that us alcoholics do, we start out with great intentions and we take a drink and the drink takes us. It's part of our disease. The obsession, the allergy sets off the craving, and the craving couples with the obsession and we're off and running. And that night I had a wonderful thing to do for my boss, to give him a party, and it was something he never had. It was a surprise. I was telling him it was PG&E night, you know, they got paid. No, it wasn't. It was raining. The bar next to the Alano Club used to be, if it rained between 5 and 7, you got 2 for 1. So I had to go there because it was raining, and it was sometime in November, and telling everybody about that. And the next thing I knew, it was like 12:45. And I literally saw myself looking at myself saying, Carol, you're so lonely. Your kids are home. You're so all alone. And I got up and left because some guy was saying, let's go off to the hotel. And I just turned around and walked away. And I was violently ill. And I'm not a woman that got, I'm not a drunk that got ill a lot in the beginning. So now my body is really starting to break down. And I said that prayer that a lot of us do, God help me. And I was in a meeting the following week on a Sunday. And the first meeting I went to in Vacaville, California, was the brand new Sunday Eye Openers. And the meeting was held in an old courthouse next to City Hall. So I naturally parked across the street at the hardware store so nobody would notice my car. And I walked in late. And they said, oh, we have a new young lady. Please announce, what's your name? And we're very small in Vacaville. We don't have... We're solid. If we have one big event a year, we get about 400. The meetings are not really big. We have some big meetings throughout the year, but and it was a lot smaller then too. So he said to me, "You want to tell us your name?" Well, my name is Carol, and I'm not an alcoholic. I have problem with control and highway patrol. My mother was a drunk, and I'm not like her. And they kind of laughed, and I thought, oh, well, I can amuse these people. And then I heard the speaker, who was a lady named Paula G. from Vallejo, and her story was disgusting, and I wasn't anything like her. And all these people were from Vallejo were there, and the Al-Anon wives came, and they sat in the jury box, and this wonderful... wonderful man, he's gone from us, he's a past delegate from the interior area, Bill M. Was there, and they all went out to breakfast. In those days, 30 years ago, we go out after every meeting, and I'm sitting there at Lions Club, but whatever it was, and I didn't drink coffee and I didn't drink milk, but I had a cup of coffee, a glass of milk, a glass of orange juice, and a glass of water in front of me. And Bill says, sweetheart, you don't think you're an alcoholic. Ain't nobody but an alcoholic has all those drinks in front of him at one time. And I thought, I'll show you. And I smiled and laughed like I do because I'm a barfly. You know how to do that. You laugh at the bad jokes. And I went directly from there to the Brigadoon to have coffee. And I went directly from the Brigadoon over to Chauncey's, which is the bar next to the Alano Club. And they were putting brandy in coffee, neither of which I ever drank, but it was different. And I was still out on Sunday evening about midnight that night. I had never gone home at the bar. It was a band there or something like that, showing him that I wasn't an alcoholic. I couldn't possibly imagine not drinking during December. And I had some, but AA. One of the things we do, we mess up your drinking. We really do. Those people are in your head. And I started to pay attention to the things that were being asked of me and expected of me to do, which were really not what I want to do. See, alcohol takes away all our inhibitions, but it also takes away our soul. And we give it away. And we know, no, I don't want to do this. I got this and that. And we still take another drink. And then we think, oh my, this is going to be different. This time it's going to be different. So I couldn't enjoy drinking that. So I decided January 1st would be my sobriety date. I went to my home group, which is Group 86, on December 18th, 1985. And I put my name in the book and couldn't quite manage to drink. But it was going to be January 1st. And one of the guys at the job site gave me a bottle of scotch because that was my drink. It wasn't Chivas Regal. So I said, tell me where you bought this. So I can trade it in for Chivas Regal because I'm going to really get drunk on New Year's Eve, but I can't drink that cheap stuff. So I'll go get it for you, Carol. And I had other stuff I was going to just have an all out one last time. And then it happened. I could not get any feeling off of anything I ingested. It was gone. And that's a really sad, dark place to be. And you have this choice. What do I do? Something real drastic and painful? Or try that AA? So I made it January 1st. 4 days later, I go down to pick up my kids. Their dad lived in Bakersfield. And I went to pick them up in Las Banas. And we went to the Wool Growers in Las Banas, which is a Basque restaurant where they always put wine on the table, which is different. And so I took a glass of wine, and I looked up to the lady that was to become my sponsor, Marie C. I expected her to be at the door. You know, you walked into the bar, into the back dining room, and it was all family style. Well, that was the bar I used to drink appropriately with all the farmers and sheep ranchers there, because I was a lady. And I would always have grapefruit with my vodka because it was a morning drink. And up at 6 o'clock before going to work. And I was the only woman in the bar. And that happened a lot, and that was my last little wimpy drink, a couple of sips of Basque wine, and that was January 5th, 1986, and that began my journey. Without thinking about it, ended up asking that lady Marie, somebody said to me, will you do a speaker meeting in 60 days? Sure. And I thought, you know, I better ask somebody that. That doesn't really sound right. I know I could do it. But I asked Marie, she goes, who's your sponsor? And I go, I don't have one. Well, if I were your sponsor, you have nothing to share. You need to shut up and listen. You can say you're an alcoholic and help somebody, but no, you don't have anything to share. So I, in a moment of weakness, said, will you be my sponsor? Because I also heard her saying she wasn't sponsoring any more women, because she's kind of like I am. She has a lot of women that she sponsors. And she said, well, let's go talk about it. And she told me things that I will tell you. She said, okay, I will be your sponsor. You always have to tell me the truth. If you can't tell me the truth, you need to find another sponsor, because your life depends on it. We will read the book. We will read the big book. We will read the 12 and 12. If you have questions and I can answer, I will. If I haven't had that experience, I'll point you to somebody that has. And you will always have a job in AA. And always remember that service in AA is a privilege. It doesn't matter what job you do. And if you can't do the job, I don't care if you get drunk or whatever, you finish that job and make sure somebody else is going to do the job. Because there's a newcomer or somebody whose life depends on that job being done. And I don't care what that job is, if you're sweeping the floors or cleaning the coffee cups. And I've held to that. Service is a privilege, and it's a big part of me and what I do in AA, both Tim and I, and all of all areas of anything. And we were talking about it tonight. You get so much back. My husband was saying at our home group, you know, when you get to that 12th step, that's where the benefit is. You get so much back, and not taking over and doing anything, and I've done that too, because I am what was known fondly as a pushy broad, and I tend to sponsor the pushy broad, but we get things done. That's what somebody says. You know, we are women that stand up and do, you know, super moms and doctors and professional people, bankers and nurses and people that want to live life on life's terms. And you can do both. I couldn't do a successful business life. I retired with 25 years. I went to work when I was 3 years sober. The lowest end job, I wasn't applying for jobs, I was broke. And somebody said, well, how come? Well, they're not up to my standards. And Maria said, you know what? Flipping burgers at Burger King, you got two kids, they're going to keep the lights on. Oh, okay, well, all right. And then I wouldn't apply for the job I eventually got, but 9 months later I did. And that happened because I finally did all the steps. 2 years sober, my daughter and I had a blowout fight, the one who's the mother of those children. And she took a swing at me, and I have a scar from that. I took a swing at her, and I broke my finger. And I had a pillow over her face saying, shut up so I can share with you. And I knew I had to give her back to her dad, and that meant I lost and he won. And why the hell was I staying sober if I'm going to lose like that? And it happened to be on my 2-year birthday, and we were starting what's called our old group's birthday speaker meeting. And Marie knew to send somebody, because I was going to jump off the first floor balcony of my apartment. It's like, why? Why? He won. He took her. She's gone. I'm never going to see her graduate. I'm never going to see her go to a prom. And my heart was broken. And I was crying going up to get my chip at the birthday meeting. But I was a member of the first three members of that steering committee. I had to show up because it was my service job. And I stayed. And then my car broke down. I got laid off again. Something else happened, and I couldn't keep a job. I couldn't get a job, and I refused to do that fifth step. And when I got to about June or July, I was one more time whining in a meeting, and a guy named Johnny, who was a dumpster diver, came up to me and says, you know what, Carol, your problem is you haven't done the fifth step, and you're going to die if you don't do the fifth step. And I said, how dare you tell me? I'm 2.5 years sober. You can't put 9 months together. He says, I know, I'm going to die too. And he did. He never got it. And, you know, we know the action, but it's taken the action that we must do in order to get on with our life, no matter what's going on in it. And then a couple weeks later, I was again whining. I was very good at whining. And all the old-timer guys are, oh, Carol, what can I do for Mary Marie, who's a very big woman, said, get away from her. I'm tired of hearing her excuses. You'd be at my house to do that fifth step tomorrow. You get a sponsor or do what you got to do, but I'm done. And you guys get away from her. And they all backed away from her. And the relief was immediate. It wasn't a blinding light, but it was like a weight was lifted. I don't know why I waited, so I'm urging you, if you're sitting on that, don't. It is in clearing out that wreckage that we start to get the relief that helps us be able to breathe and get through the next thing that we got to do to clean up the next mess, to pay the next bill. I had tremendous debt. I wasn't allowed to go bankrupt. You're going to pay it all back. Well, they call me every month and say I'm a deadbeat. She says, well, you are a deadbeat. So what? And but you're still going to pay him back $10 a week, whatever. You know, going up to pick up those bad checks over all the merchants. I should have been in jail. And I wasn't. And I had no bank account because they closed me out. And then making amends to my kids and to my ex-husband, and which didn't go really well. But I could do was do what I could do. And what he accepted, that was what he accepted because I was horrible to him. All those things happened, and about 5 months later, Marie said, how are you doing? And I go, you know what? I have every problem I had in June before I did this, but I'm okay. That's the magic of this program. Even if your life is troubled, you can be okay. And then, and that was allowed me to start really getting involved more in general service. And, oh, there's my daughter and my granddaughter. And to come and be able to do things to change. And pretty soon what happened was I had a sponsor who said no relationships for the first year inside AA, thank God. And that was a troubling area. It's very hard. And one of the things that's helpful is to try to finish those steps so you know what you want and what you want in your life. And I did that. And then I ran into this man. I was 3 years sober, I think. I ran into him when I was like 2 years sober. And I thought I dazzled him with my brilliance. And he thought I was so whiny and miserable, I should go out and get drunk. So 2 years later, we're both off of bad relationships. And both single, just doing service. We're in general service. I think I was DCMC and he was GSR. I'm not sure. And we started hanging out. And we hung out, and, you know, we were both at the International in Washington, in Seattle, and he was there, and we'd ride bikes, and we'd go to baseball games, and we'd go to ice cream in San Francisco, and he was fun to talk to. He got me to, you know, got me to ride a bike again, and we laughed, but we never held hands for 9 months, and that is not how I run. Yeah, or him either. We're both those people. And about 9 months sober, I said, okay, Where's this going? You know, we got to decide. We're either going to take the next step or we can just be friends. So unbeknownst to each other, we went to our sponsors. And he went to his sponsor, Kevin, who's no longer with us, and said, I got this blonde I've been dating and this curly-headed brunette. I think I'm going to go with the blonde. That's who I'm used to. And Kevin goes, no, Tim, go with something you're not used to. So I went to my sponsor, Marie, and I said, you know, Tim and I have a lot of fun. We go to a lot of nice places. He's a nice guy, but he's really not my, he's not, he's kind of boring. He's not what I'm used to. And she said, Carol, would you try boring for once? And so we joke, we wouldn't have gotten together if it hadn't been for our sponsors telling us to do the opposite of what we wanted to do. So getting to know a sponsor and having them help you make decisions is another good idea. Get a sponsor you can trust to that's interested in being able to really to tell you the truth. We were married on D-Day so we could remember the date, because again, we not good at relationships in 1992. So we celebrated 25 years married. And I remember at 5 years, we were like, my God, we're still married. And we like each other. It's fun. So we threw a party. And we love to throw parties. Our house is known as Casa Dorsey. We're known as Papa and Nana Carol. We not only have our own beautiful grandkids who are Taylor, 25, and Mackenzie and Cameron, who are 21, and grandson that's going to Cal Poly is 19, and another grandson is 16, and a great-grandson that's been adopted to a loving family, who's still in the family, who's going to be 3. But we have this whole group of other kids, of people we've sponsored and people that we've watched be born that all call us Papa Tim and Nana Carol. Ashley's back there. She's actually from this area. 5 years old when I first met her, and her parents were devastated by alcoholism, their relationship, and they hung in. They hung in till they worked the steps, and now these beautiful grandbabies are here, and we get to actually experience our own life. I think that's what we don't do as alcoholics. We don't experience our own life. If you're like me, I experience every life in a book or in a movie, but I never did want to get off my duff and do anything to make it happen. And what I've learned in AA is that it's my responsibility to make my life happen, good, bad, or indifferent. I sponsor a lot of women, and it's the joy of my life. They're known as the pushy broads, really, and they are pushy. And they've taken Tim and are really pushy with him, and he loves it. He used to say his life's dream was to be surrounded by women. Because he's a drunken sailor, so you know what that means, all over the world. And he didn't see much of anything past the first block, but he said, I want to be surrounded by women. But I didn't think it was going to be another daughter, granddaughters, nieces, and all these women that my wife works with that come over to this house. It's like, God, that's not what I meant. And they do surround us. If you're new to the fellowship, it sounds really hokey. And I sat there in my meetings and there's no way that this could happen. There's no way that things could be that simple or this mess could ever be gotten through or changed and not drink. I can't imagine it. But I'm here to tell you it does. And that's why you take on this experience of us sharing. You go to meetings and you listen and you find people. How did you do that? And ask them, and would you walk beside me, not carry me? We carry the message, not the alcoholic. Sponsorship is that teaches me, because it gets me back in the big book to remember and uncover and discover and discard whatever's going through our lives. Alcoholics Anonymous is a family. You know, I've been really scattered lately. One of my dear friends who I worked with 25 years, only 53, died of cancer, really horrible death. Her funeral was yesterday, and I was one of the ones that was asked to speak about her. And her friends were talking about, you said, you know, the relatives don't understand why we have to get the community center for her celebration of life. And she said, they don't understand. She's got this, I worked for the city of Vacaville for 25 years. She's got her city family, which is huge. And putting together what I was going to say, and I talked about family and about how family helps us ride the storm. You can get in a storm and allow yourself to be beat up, or you can dance in the rain. And that's what Mary Jane did. She was one of those normal people who was a light, who that shouldn't have happened to. Here I am, an alcoholic who's done such damage, but have learned how to completely, to try to not make more damage now and to clean it up and to help other people get through whatever they're having to do. And that's what I've learned here. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a family. Now, my husband's got an incurable illness, and we're actually on hospice now. And he's not able to navigate the stairs anymore, so we have this half bath downstairs. And we needed to put a shower in it. So, you know, I go to this friend, his contractors, can we do that? Well, if you go out here, it's going to cost you thousands of dollars, but maybe if we could fit it in there. So I found the stuff. And so throughout about 5 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, you know, this one coming in, tearing out, somebody brought their electrician son-in-law that did the rewiring. Somebody else came over, and I paid a lot of this, you know, but I don't expect people to give me everything when I have an ability to pay. And you know, it was one kid that was the plumber and one kid that was that does the painting that's been in and out of this program for 25 years. And all along this time, every time we're doing this, because it took a while, you know, they're doing it on outside time, I get to sit with each of these guys and they had a problem. One is got a brand new sponsee and did this, and we talked to this other guy about, you know, you've been doing this for too darn long to beat yourself anymore. You're not going to come back in alive because it's been 25 years and here you are with 6 months. Yeah, you can help me, but what are you doing about you? What, you know? And then somebody else had a problem with his work and dealing with that. He was the tile man. And you know, all the wives of these people are friends of ours, and looking at, not only did we put this bathroom together, it's really stunning. And I found this plaque that said family is the base of the magic of our life. And I didn't realize that. Even my sick family, one of the biggest demands I had to make was to my dead mother. And I learned that she was a lady that wasn't given the tools about learning how to love oneself or be loved. I was always motivated by saying, Carol, it's a good thing you got a brain because you sure are ugly. If you got all A's and one B, why'd you get a B? But that's what they were taught. And I got to forgive her and be sorry for her and not hate her and learn how to be gentler. I wasn't with my kids when they were growing up because I was in the throes of this disease, but I am with my grandkids and with all the other kids that have come here because you guys have taught me that. You guys have taught me that I can change. I don't have to live in the past. I don't have to be trapped by it. I don't have to be defined by it. I can stand up and fall down and I'm okay. I don't drink anyway. I don't have to crawl before anybody, and I can weather the storm and dance in the rain. And when we got to come here, the hospice people said, I can't believe all the people that you have here. Every time you talk about somebody, it's another friend that is coming to help you. I said, we have a lot of friends. We're kind of like a second family. And you two are my family, the family of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you've got a problem with alcohol, we got a solution for living with grace and dignity, sober, because we're members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Another round of applause.